Hello and welcome to the Interfish Podcast, where we bring you the most interesting and compelling seafood news. I'm Drew Cherry, Editor-in-Chief, joined today by Executive Editor John Fiorillo. We're going to look at just a couple of stories this week. It's been another busy one in seafood, but I think on everyone's minds globally is inflation and what inflation is going to mean for our personal finances and businesses and everything, in addition to the looming specter of a recession. So there's a lot of worry about how this is going to impact future seafood sales, how it's going to impact mergers and acquisitions, investments. It has a lot of implications. But down at the very bottom of all this, ultimately, in the seafood industry, there is somebody putting a food into their mouth, and they are purchasing something from a menu at a restaurant, or they're in a retail store, and where they put their money is going to dictate how things go in the sector. So, John, you've been writing quite a bit about this, and last week you reported on some of the latest statistics that had come out on retail sales and on food service. Give us a sense of kind of where things might be headed. Why don't we talk a little bit about food service first? Because, you know, I think there's been a feeling there has been some recovery since COVID, and people have wanted to bounce back, pull out their wallets, and go out to eat. But the new stats maybe raise some questions about that.
Yeah, no, you're entirely correct. There has been a good bounce back at food service, understandably so, given, you know, 2020 was pretty much closed down. 2021 was kind of up and down a little bit, but especially towards the end of 21, the recovery really gained momentum and it carried into this year. But by June, things started to weaken, largely because of food inflation and inflation across a lot of consumer products. Roger O'Brien, CEO of Santa Monica Seafood in California, told me that, yeah, the first half of the year was excellent for them for the most part. But in July, things started to recede, and now when you look at all the economic indicators out there, it looks like the second half of the year will be a tough one for food in general, but for food service operators, and vis-a-vis that implies that seafood may have trouble as well. You know, it's a consumer confidence thing a lot more than anything else, but obviously, you know, consumers don't feel super confident right now. A measure of how they expect the economy and their personal finances to go is at a very low level. It really decreased sharply in June, and it's the lowest level since March 2013. So that just suggests that consumers are, you know, going to rein in their spending until they feel a little more assured that their personal finances are going to be okay and the overall economy is going to be good. So, yeah, short story on food service, first half good. Second half looks a little troublesome.
So, okay. Now, for those that don't know, seafood is extremely important at food service in the U.S. Globally, it is, but especially in the U.S. So where food service goes, sometimes there goes the rest of the industry. It's an indicator, too, of just how people feel about seafood and purchasing. So it's not necessarily, John, correct me if I'm wrong, that because you're going to a restaurant less, you're going to automatically go buy that food at retail.
No, that's not the case at all. In fact, you know, food service has always been a really strong place for consumption of seafood as opposed to retail. And we know all the reasons, but you know, people go to a restaurant, sometimes special occasion, but a lot of times when it comes to seafood, they just trust that it'll be prepared correctly there. So that's why they choose seafood when they go to a restaurant. And it's also important to keep in mind that a lot of seafood is sold not necessarily through the chains, although that is a big component, but a lot of the independent restaurants, they tend to be a little higher end, a little you know, fancier, and menus in those places tend to have seafood as a feature. So we've lost roughly 70 to 100,000 of those types of restaurants. You know, there's a lot of rebuilding that has to happen. And again, good news was it has been happening, at least through, you know, the first half of this year. Hopefully this is just a little slowdown given the bigger macroeconomic problems out there right now, and not some sort of, you know, deep slump that we enter in like we did in 2020.
Right. And retail is also kind of troubled as well, both in the UK, other parts of Europe, and in the US. And one of the things that we're seeing in the statistics is that people are moving away from brands and toward private label more, or store brand, as it's more commonly referred to in the UK. And, you know, you walk into any retail outlet and you're going to typically see that there's a store brand, a private label, where you can find a product typically cheaper right next to a brand. And one of the behaviors that is pretty classic in a recession or when inflation begins to rise is a move toward private label. So our colleague John Evans wrote a story on this. It was really fascinating to read some of the stats on the behavior. One study in France found that 78% of French consumers abandoned mainstream brands in favor of private label over the past year. And I find that is a stunning statistic. Now, that's not all brands. That's not everything that they're doing or shopping. They're just saying that some of the brands they used to purchase, they're now moving toward private label brands. But that's another very interesting trend, and it just indicates again that the inflation is beginning to make consumers a little careful about their choices at retail as well. And John, I mean, what's your take then on the retail side of things from the U.S.? The latest numbers are pretty ugly.
Yeah, well, I'll go there in a sec, but let me just, to your point you just made, this exactly happened to me the other day. So I went to the grocery store and I wanted some frozen Patagonia red shrimp. And in the case, they had basically two options. One was a branded one, a seafood company we all know, I'm not going to name it. The other was the store brand. There was a difference of, I don't even remember now, but I want to say it was a dollar or maybe two at the most. And there was no doubt in my mind which one I was going to take. You know, the packages were basically the same, the weight and all that. But I was just like, oh, I can save $2. I don't care about the store brand necessarily. Like, it's not, oh, I'm going to always take them. But in that particular case, at this particular time when money's getting tighter, it was a no-brainer. So I just throw that out there. Now, back to the question in the U.S. Basically, what's happened, we had the research firm 210 Analytics do some first half of the year numbers for us. And what you see is seafood sales at retail have basically returned on a volume basis, which to me is the more important measurement. On a volume basis, sales have returned to pre-COVID levels, basically 2019 levels. So we made massive gains over the last year and a half. We've given all those back. Now, on a dollar measure, if you measure by dollars, it's higher. It's significantly higher, but most of that is probably the inflationary number, spike of the numbers. The other thing that is really, and I'm starting to notice it more and more where I shop, in the stores I shop, is the variety, because of supply chain problems, inflation, all these factors that we've been writing about, shipping, blah, blah, blah. The variety of seafood in not only the fresh case, but in the frozen areas has really been pared down. The number of SKUs has been pared down. The number of products has been pared down. If you ever want to just see it and for your own eyes, just go look at smoked seafood, for example, smoked salmon. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that there were, 20 SKUs of all different brands and da da da. They're down to where I shop, they're down to five. Some are store, some are private brands. But so now we're getting this situation where seafood is being pared down within the stores themselves, less variety, and that's a little troublesome. We'll see where that goes. But yeah, I don't want the seafood category to become shrimp and salmon. Not much besides that, but that is kind of what's happening.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable. That's a topic for another podcast, but I think it's inevitable that we're going to see that more and more. And I've seen it as well, that a lot of grocery stores, I was in Europe last month, and same, you see a much smaller variety. Even in France, for example, where they're very, very proud of their kind of beautiful fresh fish displays, where a part of the culture and a part of the way to draw in consumers has traditionally been to showcase a variety of species, to just show your range and kind of show this abundance of the sea, I guess. And at the fresh fish counters I went to several stores, and I saw a very different presentation than I'd seen in years past. And it was a much more limited variety. There was still more variety than you would see, for example, in the UK or in the United States, or Norway, or other Northern European countries. But still, it was markedly more narrow. And so I think that does speak to what you're talking about, John, is not only from a price perspective, but also just from a store stocking perspective. I think there's limitations now on what people are willing to gamble on a bit at retail. I think people, we've seen this certainly in our reporting on the salmon industry, that buyers are much more careful about entering, especially on the spot market when they're kind of trading fish regularly. They are much more careful about having a customer on the end of the chain before they actually make a purchase. So we're not seeing a lot of a lot of sort of gambling on different kinds of species. People are really going for the ones that they can bank on. And I think that's that kind of moves us into our next topic. But before we go there, I just wanted to loop back around to the private label piece of things, because have some interesting statistics here from Seafish. The UK, it represents the UK seafood industry. And they have some fantastic statistics, retail analysis. And Aldi and Lidl, the two best known discounters, their share, overall share of seafood, through the end of June versus the 52 weeks of the end of June versus the 2 years prior. So, yeah. So if you look back a year through June and 2 years through June. So Aldi has grown its market share, its total trade in fish, by 1.2%. Lidl even more than that by nearly 1 point. Nearly 1.4%. And so that just shows consumers are turning much more to those types of discounters. And as you would expect, you're seeing larger retailers that control the majority of the seafood sales in the UK, Tesco and Sainsbury's, their share has kind of slipped. So anyway, it's just, again, another interesting sign, another interesting indicator that inflation is beginning to have an effect on consumer behavior. Now, one fish that does seem to be immune to whatever you can throw at it is salmon. Farm salmon has taken its slings and arrows over the years, and in the past two decades of reporting on it, there have been more scandals than I can even count, more negative scientific reports, documentaries, newspaper stories, podcasts, and not just ours. There's been a lot of criticism leveled at the salmon farming industry over the years. And, you know, salmon has continued to grow and grow and grow in consumption. And people, as of now, have been willing to pay a very high price for it, especially compared to other proteins. Now, a new book has come out, and this is kind of what the industry has been excited about over the past few days. The book is called Salmon Wars, The Dark Underbelly of Our Favorite Fish. It's by Douglas France and Catherine Collins. France won a Pulitzer Prize, I believe, maybe they both have, for a reporting. He was, I believe, an editor at the Los Angeles Times. I'll have to look more closely to his bio, but at any rate, the book, is a major publisher has put it out, and it's went on sale, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. Now, it is interesting. I have not had time to read it, and so before I can get too much into criticizing the details of the book, I have to read it. The last thing I want to do at the end of my day of writing about fish is reading a book about fish. But I will eventually get around to reading it. Now I read some of the excerpts, and more importantly, I read the opinion piece that the two authors put out in Time magazine or on time.com, kind of outlining in general their case against farm salmon. And it was kind of a greatest hits of the criticism that's leveled against the salmon farming industry. And I guess, you know, John, you and I were talking about whether or not this would have any effect. A couple of years ago, a year and a half ago now, the documentary Seaspiracy, I'm sure a lot of our listeners would remember, caused a major stir. It was, of course, different, I guess, in the sense that the medium was different. It was more easy to share, much more savvy marketing campaign. This is a book. Far fewer people read books than can sit down and watch a documentary. John, let's start talking about whether or not you think this will have any effect, and whether or not what you read in their opinion piece about their description of what the book was about and why they wrote it, whether you think there's anything new, fresh, or of merit in there.
Okay, well, let's talk about their motivation first. And yes, he shares a Pulitzer Prize award, so you know, credentials are there. In an op-ed they did in Canada's Globe and Mail, this was a month or maybe a little longer ago, they said they were inspired to write on this subject after attending public meetings several years ago near their home in Nova Scotia concerning Cermaq's plans to expand operations there. And so if I read between the lines there, they really didn't want any more salmon farming in their quote unquote neighborhood, let's say. So sounds pretty NIMBY to me, but I'll go on now from there. As far as its impact, I agree with you. I don't see it as having the reach or the power of something like Seaspiracy. Again, like you said, it's a book. You're going to have to go online. You're going to have to drop, I don't know how much it costs. I'll just say $10. I have no idea. Whatever it is, you have to drop that, get it shipped to you, blah, 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 blah. Well, there you go. Books have gone up since I bought one. Now, with that said, the industry has responded strongly, I think, in a correct manner, and the industry has to be vigilant at all times against stuff like this, because you wrote something several years ago now when tilapia started getting bashed and on the internet, and it took a life of its own. Well, tilapia sales crashed in the U.S. and there's a direct correlation. They've recovered since, but you know, these things can take on a life of their own. I don't think this will. It doesn't seem like it was done very well or brings anything new to the table. And as you mentioned, consumers, you know, salmon has become chicken for consumers. It's on their lists. They buy it every week or every other week. It's going to take a lot to rock them out of the boat, I would think, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, just in looking at the kind of what some of the assertions are about the industry, there really isn't much new. They, you know, they get in a little bit to the industry itself, which is kind of interesting. In particular, as you mentioned, Cermaq, and they highlight Cook as well. And so they did a lot of a background on the salmon farming industry itself. Nothing I think hasn't been reported out there already. But you know, when you have, and I guess this speaks to kind of a larger disappointment that I have in general with press coverage. And I mean, you know, physician heal thyself, you know, I'm a journalist. This is what we do for a living. But we make all kinds of mistakes, of course. That's journalism is it's not an easy job. And it's not easy to get every single detail correct. However, you do need to do your due diligence. You do need to check your facts. You do need to do the work if you want to have credibility. And when you make mistakes, you need to come out and correct yourself. What is confusing to me is, and especially with somebody or two people that are so clearly talented, you don't work at those publications and win those types of awards if you're not extremely talented and hardworking and a good researcher. You know, you just don't, or one would think that you don't. But the statistics that are regurgitated here, they're many of them have been straight out disproven, or at least they've come into big question. And it just is, it's disappointing to me that I'm more than happy to read critical books or see critical films about the seafood industry. We cover it objectively. It's an industry that we are, I would argue, harder on than probably most. But when you're throwing out accusations that are, or facts that have been disproven or that are extremely biased, or the sources have an axe to grind, that's disappointing. There's plenty of, if you do the research, there's plenty of things that you can look at the seafood industry and you can criticize, and you can point to ways that it needs to improve and point to problems and challenges. But it's lazy to me to pull out some of these statistics that have been already disproven. And that to me is a disappointment. And I just see that regularly in the coverage of the seafood industry. Again, there is plenty to criticize in the seafood industry, in the fishing and aquaculture industry. There's a lot. But if you're going to do it and you're going to take the time to write a book about it, do some fact checking. Make sure that you're actually going in and reading about these industries more carefully. So that's number one. That's the issue that I took with the op-ed that they wrote about it and the excerpts that I read. Now, as to whether or not it will have an impact on sales or consumption, I agree with you, John, that the answer is absolutely not. You know, why is it different than tilapia? Why is it different than maybe some other food scares? I think there was one blurb that compared it to the McDonald's expose, Fast Food Nation, which, well, again, I'm going to have to read it, but I can tell just already from what I have read, the writing is not as compelling as Schlosser's Fast Food Nation, and it's not going to be near enough to uncover that there was in that book. But I think that it's going to be very difficult for any single book or even any single documentary to really knock salmon off its perch any more than you could knock chicken or beef off their perches with one single book. And I don't really know that this would even lead to any change necessarily. Because I don't see anything in their description of what they're trying to do. I don't see any sort of solution that they're offering beyond don't eat farm salmon, which, you know, I just don't think people are going to stop doing that.
Well, you know, the other, I agree with all that. The other thing I will say is, you know, these are old, you know, retread tales and complaints about salmon aquaculture. For example, sea lice. We'll just take that one for example. Whenever I see these stories, these critical stories or analyses, or in this case, a book, I'm always struck by how there's no information at all about all of the things being done to mitigate, say, sea lice or disease, or all the investment that salmon farming companies have made and are continually making to solve the challenges that so many people want to, you know, point out. Never a mention of that. I mean, anybody who reads our stuff knows that these salmon farm companies are investing hundreds of millions in aggregate for closed containment research, RAS, you know, moves that will address the problems that have been out there but are not like they used to be. So if I'm reading something like this and I don't see that element in it, I pretty much move on to the comic page or something else, you know. So,
well, I mean, I think too, just like you were saying, Roger O'Brien was mentioning too that, you know, salmon is a bellwether now, that as goes salmon goes, you know, the rest of the seafood consumption, and it really is. It really is a species that you're not seeing people moving away from in, by any stretch of the imagination. So just taking the U.S., for example, in 2018, consumers were eating 2.55 pounds of seafood per capita in the United States. And in 2020, that was already up to 2.83 pounds. Going straight up, if you look at imports, let's look at imports into the United States. In 2021, just strictly fresh farm salmon fillets. The amount of volume that came into the United States was 193,000 metric tons worth $2.4 billion. That's just fillets. So that's not something that's going to go away overnight. And this is a very sophisticated industry that's behind it. That's supplying it, and they're beholden to a lot of buyers that are purchasing that fish. So there's a lot of standards that companies have to meet to get their fish into any of these Western countries or Eastern countries to get onto people's plates. And so I think that part of it too, you know, not apologizing for the industry, but just pointing out that it's not unregulated by any stretch of the imagination. And there are plenty of groups, both not just industry, but NGOs, retail, food service, major companies that have banked their sustainability policy oftentimes on their farmed salmon purchasing policy. There was some comparisons with the chicken and beef segment in Salmon Wars, and one of them was had to do with the amount of antibiotics that were used. Of course, in Norway, there are no antibiotics used in farmed salmon. In Chile, there are. They've made efforts to reduce that. But again, when you're painting with a wide brush, I mean, if you're saying that that the net pens are awash with antibiotics, well, be specific and say that if you want to use the word awash, you know, you're trying to get a rise, fine. If you have an opinion on something, you can use that word, absolutely. But say it about the country that's actually having actually using the stuff. So it's little hair splitting things like that that ultimately were kind of bothersome to me, but it just doesn't
seem... Hair splitting? You mean details?
Detail. Facts. Isn't that what they're called? Facts?
But, I hear those are important once in a while. That's what I hear.
Once in a while, yeah. So, yeah, so I think it's... the industry has come out kind of strongly. The Global Seafood Alliance had had some... refuted some of the facts and several other groups as well. We thought it was interesting. We wrote a note about the book being published, and let the industry know kind of what it's what the angle was of the book. But in general, I don't feel like this quite has the same legs as some of the other things that have been written about the industry or filmed about the industry. So I guess we'll see how it goes, but. From my point of view, I don't see this having a big impact, but it was definitely got under my skin a little bit. Again, just from the point of view of a journalist, I really, really want to see people, when they're criticizing something, using facts and being accurate. That's it for this episode. We will look forward to chatting with you next time. Remember, you can find us on intrafish.com. You can sign up for our newsletters there. Our coverage is on the site 24/7. You can also download our app and read our news there and get push alerts so that when we report on anything of interest to you, a topic that you want to follow, you can get an alert on it. So if you want to track farm salmon, if you want to track disease, if you want to track sea lice, you can get an alert for that. So if you really do want to know what's happening with sea lice and the impact that it's having on salmon farming, by all means, go onto our site, get a sea lice alert. All right, folks, we'll talk to you next time.